search. Each man different, living his own way, searching, discovering numero uno.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of Broken by Concept Podcast, episode 188. We have Nathan, the Jungle Master, Mott, and then Coach, the Mid Lane Master, Morgan.
Motticus and Morganus.
Yeah. Okay.
Motticus and Morgan something.
We're here for another episode. And I recently wrote this article for the MLA and I titled it Evolving as a Player and as a Person. And basically what I covered in this article are, I guess, a handful of, I guess, observations I've made through my time coaching about how league and specifically the MLA helps you not only develop as a player, but as a person in your day-to-day life. You know, and there's two things that I want to highlight from this article that I wrote. The first one was what I've noticed.
So these are things that you've observed from people messaging you over the years, from things that people... I always see in your Discord as well, there's lots of discussion about Broken by Concept, a lot of the stuff like the how this podcast as well applies to their real life sort of...
You know, I think, yeah, we have a lot of discussion in our community about how maybe what are some other parallels to other industries, whether it be, you know... finance or a differing sport or
love
whatever
industries. We got sushi, we got F1, we got NFL, all
martial arts. And you know, so the first one that I observed is people thinking in second and third order consequences. This is the first one. And so basically, for those of you who haven't heard of this term before, you know, what I've noticed is that when people come into my program, they think of, again, I'm just going to start with league and then we'll expand from there. I make X decision, I get this kill, and I get Y outcome. I get an outcome. Very simple. You know, an input, an output. And that's objectively true. If I get a kill, I'm going to get golden experience and thumbs up. Great. But in reality, in league, there are second and third order consequences. These are the consequences in the future for the decision that you made. So a classic example might be, okay, I solo killed my laner. I don't have TP. I can't get the wave out. The wave's now frozen. Was going for this kill even worth it? Maybe I would have actually been better off letting the wave come out a little bit, slowing it down, maybe playing for a better quality reset. The El Clasico, another one is, I'm going to roam bot side. Great, I got this dive off. I got this kill, but okay. Now I lose two plates mid, I lose two waves, and I'm not there for grubs. Right, that's the second order and third order consequences of the decision that you made.
This concept right here is probably one of the biggest things people struggle to improve, the things that they miss, because you get tricked by the scoreline. You get tricked by the kill. I did a review today talking about how time is a resource. Like, league's a game of resources at the end of the day. If you actually think about it, it really is like, you know, those civilization games in a way. Mm. It's like I put resources into this village, it sort of becomes strong. Honestly, I don't know where I'm going with that.
No. Let's riff on that. I think that's interesting. I never heard you say this before.
Really? It's like, I've always thought about it. It's like a civilization, but I'm just trying to think how that applies to the league.
So what you're saying is that, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm just going to try and riff off what you said there, where you're, as a jungler, you spend time and effort and resources in a particular area, and then they can utilize that resources to get ahead and maybe do their own thing. You're like upgrading that town or something.
I guess it's to get terrain in a certain place.
Interesting.
And the terrain might not be, it's not actually going to give you position to get something else in the future.
So again, like now what I'm thinking about when you're saying that is like an RTS, right?
Maybe
you're playing
like an RTS
and then you know how there's the map. And typically when you're playing RTS is you've got to gather resources, but you also got to expand your territory and you've got to like create another base and you've got to move up. But what you're saying is that, again, correct me if I'm wrong, that sometimes you can expand to an area that has no value.
Yeah.
Is that what you mean?
I've like never played an RTS. I'm not confident in this analogy at all. We're going to stop that analogy right there. Okay. Let's go back to my favorite one, my chess one, right?
Let's just speak about it very simply.
I think chess is a bit more simpler, right? It's like, I have a move. How much value was this move? What do I lose on the back end, right? Like, you can make game losing moves, even though it like might give you a piece or something like that, right? It's just chess turn. My turn, your turn. My turn, your turn. And what your job is as a league player is, how can I get more out of my turn than they can get out of their turn? That's actually how you review and you can look at things.
Right. So, yeah, you're spot on. It's the same thing in chess, right? You don't just think, oh, there's a piece, I'm going to go for that. But you're also thinking, okay, if I go for that, they can get my piece. And I, you know, you're thinking in third order. In chess, it's probably way more advanced. I'm assuming it's like second, third order, fourth order, fifth order. They're probably thinking, way, way in advance, right? In League, you can't really think too far in advance because your mental stack is so overloaded. My point was more bigger picture, getting people to think in this way, not even in terms of the way they play the game, but even the way they review in all aspects of the game. Everything from items, right? Even items. If I buy this item, okay, well, what does that mean for me? If I go damage here and I build a needlessly large rod when I could have actually finished my seekers. Oh, interesting. You know, you're not just thinking in terms of what you're getting immediately. You're also thinking of the opportunity cost.
Yes, opportunity cost. That's a really good word.
That's the word, opportunity cost. Yeah. And I think that League is a really great medium to develop this level, this mode of thinking. And what I've noticed inside the program as people stay longer and longer in the program, what I've noticed is that they change not only the quality of the questions, but even just the way they view League as a whole. And I think that this whole concept of, opportunity cost, second, third order consequences is something that I've observed. And I think this is a very practical skill that applies to everything, whether it's, you know, a decision about what you're going to do with whether you're, you know, deciding to go out to a specific place or rent a specific place, or what are you going to do with your money? Okay, if I spend my money on this, okay, what's gonna happen next week, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that this, it's a very, a mature way of thinking, and typically takes time in the real world to develop this level of thinking. I mean, depending on the industry that you're in, but that's my first observation. Okay,
love it.
Any comments about that before we move on? Okay. Now, this is the second one, and this is something that's very personal to me, and I have mentioned this on another episode, and I think this is such an important message, something that I personally am a massive advocate for, so I really want to revisit this regularly on the podcast. Now, I think in this day and age, you know, especially with social media, and I would say there's the culture of social media, in the sense that we're very aware, or it's shoved in our face about what other people are doing. Whether it's, oh, you're this person's doing this, they've got this car, they have this job. We are, in a way, hyper aware of information that in the past we never would have known, right? We just automatically are exposed to all this information and naturally compare ourselves to other people, just because of the nature of social media.
And it's obviously been a highlight reel people like to put on there. They're not going to post bad
things.
That's
right. And this applies, again, same thing to League of Legends, right? Yeah. You're seeing everyone, people are posting their massive achievements, even in the League Achievements channel, right? That's one of the negatives that people will say of the League Achievements channel.
Yeah, it is.
It's like, oh, great, I got Master 10. And then you're sitting there, fuck me, I'm just lost 6 games in a row. I'm an Emerald, I'm never going to get Master 10.
I had one in my below Platinum program, saying bronze to platinum in 20 days or whatever. I'm like, I sort of looked, I was like, oh God, you know, like the people that are really struggling. Like, I don't really know what that guy's background is. I don't actually know much about how he specifically did that. I sort of looked quickly at his OPGG, but you sort of think like, you know, how does this affect other people?
Right. And it's one of the side effects, or it's like an unintended cause or an unintended effect.
You want to celebrate your achievements, right?
Right.
But, yeah.
And I'm not getting
to those achievements is just, you know, it's, you know how there's like the meme of me always saying it's like absolute chaos, absolute like insane situations, absolute massive hole, and I just say love it. Like that's way more exciting to me about the League thing. I like achievements is cool and all, but the journey is just the most fun part.
Totally.
And the brutal months that you piss away, and the I'm making the same mistake again and again and again, and I know that I want to work on, but if I keep making the mistake, that's the fun when you actually get over those hurdles.
But not many people post that on social media broadcast that to the public, do they? Yeah. I mean, how many people are there in a positive way trying to share lost experience, lost streaks?
Yeah.
Usually when people post lost streaks, it's venting and I'm pissed. Yeah. It's not in a celebrating losses or celebrating learnings. It's more of a negative way.
In a way, I mean, again, I don't really watch too much of Tyler 1's streams, but you know when Tyler 1 did his challenger on all roles, like that was really ugly journey,
right,
but he got there. Yeah, totally. Like it was actually motivational in a way. It should have been for a lot of people. I mean, obviously Tyler 1 has his own, you know, a bit different from our philosophy in the game here, but that's cool.
I agree.
To see like him really, struggling through that's that. Real.
In the process of him getting to streamed that rank.
At all.
I love that, totally.
Yeah.
But I think there's a very, that exists totally. And I think that's a positive. And I think people showing that process and their failures, I think is super important. But I think objectively with the whole, again, the way I guess how connected we are, one of the byproducts is that we naturally compare ourselves to others. Would you agree with that?
Of course, 100%.
Right, yeah. Okay, so there's that. Then we also have, I would say for me, and this is something I've noticed, bigger picture, I guess, in the content creation sphere, not even in, yes, in reference to League of Legends, but I would say holistically, is this kind of like whole meta of self-improvement, right? In the sense that, you know, you see it with Andrew Huberman, heaps of podcasts about you know, just being better,
yeah.
right? Being better, yeah. optimizing sleep, optimizing your life, like life optimization, essentially. And so, you know, you've got this, these two kind of, I guess, I'm just going to call them two different spheres that are just like ever present nowadays in social, when it comes to content creation and social media. And these things are kind of linked in a way where imagine you are, and I would say just speaking for me personally, you know, you've got this world out there of just looking at other people and their achievements and what they're doing. And then you look at yourself and you're like, well, I'm just not even close. Whether it's, again, financially, whether it's physically, in any way, shape or form. And then you've, or a league achievements. And then you've got, you know, this other side of thing, which is you got to be better. You could be doing this better. You're eating like shit. You're sleeping like shit. Yeah. You're not going outside enough. You have not enough vitamin C, vitamin D. You got to eat more fish. Like the list is endless about the things that you could be doing to optimize your life. There's even that big famous YouTuber that's trying to optimize his life and live till, you know, be the longest living guy, Brian guy.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious though, because you know that the way it works is that there's an algorithm specific that might be what you're interested in. I'm curious to see what our audience is on, because remember you get dished things that you are potentially interested in. That might not be at all what algorithms.
Right, yeah.
Someone's purely in the league world, and their entire
is they don't Twitter, see anything YouTube, about anything
everything's
else.
Pure, just like Lee, right? So,
well, I would say this also applies in league though. Whether it's my videos,
yeah.
Here are things you could be doing to optimize your review process. Here are the things you could be doing to review your champ mastery. Here's the things you could be doing better to learn your matchups more. Right, whether this is extended to the point that I'm talking about in terms of life optimization, or whether it's in relation to whatever craft you're in, specifically league, there is always someone telling you, or you're seeing it, that you could be doing something better, more efficiently, more effectively, optimizing this, optimizing that. We're in this world.
So you're saying it's shoved in your face?
I'm just saying it exists. It
exists, okay.
Okay, so you've got that. And I'm trying to set the groundwork here, all right? I think that, again, this is not all negative. One of the byproducts of this is that it can make you feel incredibly shit about yourself if you're not careful. Not always, if you're not careful. And I'm going to just speak freely. I've had times not even that long ago where I feel like, fuck it. I just feel like a piece of shit.
Yeah, I'm just like, not doing any of this.
I'm not doing anything right. I don't feel like I'm playing great League of Legends. Yeah. I don't feel like I'm coaching at my best. I feel like there's so many, I'm so hypercritical of myself. I feel like I could be doing so much better to be a better coach. I could be making better content, more refined, cleaner content. I could be doing more in my days. I could be working out harder at the gym. I could be eating cleaner. I could be sleeping earlier. I should be optimizing. Like, I could be reading more. It's like, it's never fucking ends. To the point where I'm at the point where it's like, oh, the podcast episode could be better. I could be better prepared for the BBC episodes. It gets overwhelming to the point where it's like, well, fuck, I'm just a piece of shit. Like, I'm not counting my wins at all. I'm at fucking rock bottom confidence. Like, I had this not even longer. I just felt like an absolute piece of shit. Mm. And that's coming from me. And that's people who regularly DM me and say how I've changed their life and they're so thankful for me, you know. And I'm just saying that's from me. I'm just saying straight up, that's someone in my position, what I'm doing, and people will look up to me, whatever. I'm just saying that that's how I can feel sometimes. You know, and so my point being, and I've dealt with this my whole life, and I think nowadays in this day and age, I think that's common. My hypothesis here is that is common. And I see this in the in my MLA, where people are so critical of themselves. They're so good at putting themselves down. They're so good at you know, oh, yep, you know, I'm not going to climb anyway. It's just, you know, they're so, or even when they do climb, they don't count their wins. They're not proud of the effort they're putting in. They're not proud of the way they're conducting themselves on the rift. They're not proud of their effort. And I think that the point that I'm trying to make here, and what I really want to push in this podcast, is the idea of self-love and self-appreciation. You know, and so the core problem here, Nathan, is that we think that we need to get to some end result so that we can be happy with ourselves. It's like, I should only rest, that's not the right word. I should only be proud and happy and give myself the pat on the back when I get to this X result, whether I get Challenger, when I get Master Tier, when I get here, when I do, it's like this thing that's way, way, way in the future. And the fear is that if I do give myself a pat on the back, the fear is that if I do count my wins now, I'm going to get complacent and I'm not going to get there. But that I call bullshit on that. I absolutely call bullshit on that. And I think more people need to be counting their wins and actually learning to say, you know what? I am worthy of love and respect based off the effort that I'm putting in, because it's not about the result. It's about the effort. It's about your expression of best self. If you can honestly look yourself in the mirror after a game and be like, you know what? I fucking tried. I busted my balls this game. We still lost. I didn't play perfectly. I'm not Faker. But you know what? I did what I could. I played to my limit. I played to my absolute level. I'm reviewing my games. I'm sticking to blocks. I'm following a process. You should be fucking proud of yourself.
That's so exciting. That's what's more exciting to me.
That's what's more exciting.
This is the thing about this idea, Curtis, right? There has been many times in your life, everyone listening to this, that said to themselves, once I got this problem solved, my life's awesome, right? I've achieved it, which could have been stuff like, let's say you make it into university, something simple like that, probably relates to a lot of our audience, hitting this rank. Everyone has already achieved that thing that they said would make them happy.
Mm.
They've already done it. So if you just keep following that train of thought, I don't feel that way right now. Why? I thought that I literally told myself once I hit this, it even might be just an amount of money or something like that. You know, like, suddenly I'm making, $6,000 a month, whatever. I said like, oh, once I get there, it'll be so good. Once I get a job that gives me that much money. And then you get to that point and then it's like, you're just like, well, it's not enough. Like,
there's another goal.
You've already, but you literally, remember, you said to yourself, everything would be awesome if I just got to that point.
Mm.
So it will never end. Even your ranking league and everything like that. Because I've had also people in my program as well. They would think, oh, I hit diamond. This was a dream for me. I would say that if I'm a diamond level player, awesome. But then they get into diamond games and stuff and it's like, you're just in the same shit all over again. You know, it's just the same thing. You're just to be better at the game.
And there's nothing wrong with setting and achieving goals. You're right. It's the way it makes us feel.
That's why you have to, the only hack is you got to, it has to be the journey. It has to be the most exciting thing.
It has to be the effort.
The effort.
That's what you need to be proud of. Yeah. It's the effort. It's if you go out there and you do your best, then that's all you can ever ask for. And I know it sounds corny.
Yeah, but you're saying that you were getting told by all this social media and all sort of stuff and podcasts and stuff that you weren't putting in enough effort.
Yeah, but no, but this is the thing. It's like, it's okay, yeah, let's explore that. The reality is in life, you're not gonna optimize every single fucking thing about your life. I mean, this is highly personal.
It's going back to the time resource thing.
It's going back to time resources, where I'm gonna spend my energy, but I'm gonna also say this. You know, I think that in a way, life is kind of about sacrifice in a way. You're not gonna have everything. You're not going to be a pro player, have like a crazy sophisticated friendship group, have an amazing social life, be able to play all these sports and have all these amazing hobbies, play music, learn a language. You got to pick shit.
Yeah, you do need
to pick. You got to make a decision in your life. You're not going to be able to optimize for every single little thing. The reality is that all of us have real life responsibility. We have shit we got to do. And you pick a path in your life. You know, I think the point that I'm trying to make is more so, less so the practical advice that I'm hearing from those people about optimizing your life, more so the idea that I'm not good enough. I'm not doing enough. I could be doing more. Optimize. When in reality, it's like, okay, yeah, sure. But okay, let's just focus. I'm just going to pick one thing. I'm going to really put my effort here. I'm going to do what I can. And it's not about, I don't need to optimize every, I'm not a robot.
A big one for me is I want to waste a lot of time on that one thing. I want to go pursue this one thing and go down different directions and stuff up and fail and stuff like that versus thinking that I'm going to go and start doing this one thing. And I just feel like it's like a straight line path, which I think is like what people are trying to tell you. It's like the human experience is about the failing and the stuffing up. I'm just like as you're saying that, I'm just looking at Duro Dreams of Sushi, right? Imagine that dude, right? He has over 70 years. I highly recommend you watch this documentary by the time. Jiro Dreams of Sushi.
If anyone hasn't seen it, really
it's like the best documentary. It will completely change the way you view time, I guess, which is all we're getting at. Like, if he was to break down, if he was hyper-efficient being a sushi chef, he would probably say, I spent 4 years doing this on rice. That was actually not that important. Like, I'm sure he could, like, literally write that down. You know, so I think that, and that's just part of it.
That's the life experience.
Yeah, it's just the life experience. Like, does anyone have a manual? You know, even if we were to become the best League of Legends coaches of all time and had a manual, we thought we could create a manual. It's like you follow this to get to challenger. We could never do that. It's impossible. There's too many human elements to improving at a craft. It's just not, it wouldn't be possible. We could definitely create a program that gets people pretty far, like if you follow it, or, you know, helps a certain type of person with a gaming background or something like that, but it can't be for everyone. There's not like a life manual out there.
Yeah, and look, I feel like we're opening a can of worms, because I think this is very, very complicated. This whole idea of, you know, how do I, you know, I got to be obviously proud. I got to put in effort. I got to obviously do shit that's hard and difficult and get out of my comfort zone.
I think direction's important.
Yeah, spot on. I think direction's important. Yeah. I think getting uncomfortable is important. I think trying and like making an effort and really like, you know, doing shit that's hard. I think that's pretty important as well. Whatever the hell it is, doesn't have to be League, but you know, in our case, we love League. We think it's an incredibly hard skill, and a fucking hard game, and that's why we like it. And I think that, you have to get comfortable counting your wins, and honestly, like, you can't be in this mentality where it's like constantly, I'm not good enough. I could be doing this better. I could be doing that better. Because you're just going to lose your mind. You're just going to fucking lose your mind. And I see that all the time. And I get so sad. And I literally have told so many people, like, you have to count your wins. You have to appreciate the effort that you're putting in. Now, this doesn't apply to the people that are sloppy. You know, they're not putting in the effort. They're not doing the work. They're cutting corners.
You have the people with a fake process that looks like you're putting in the effort, but they're not.
Yeah, of course. You got to earn your shit in life. I'm not saying everyone is the same, but like, I just think that, my point that I'm trying to make here is I just don't think there's enough love and appreciation for ourselves. That's it.
Yep.
That's what I see.
Count your wins. Small count your wins. Mindset.
Count your wins. Be more obsessed with your effort and the expression of yourself than the result itself. And if you can do that and you can remain positive, and the results will come anyway, and they'll come in a much more efficient manner anyway, because you'll just be in a better positive mindset. You'll be more open-minded, more curious, less egotistical, less bogged down in the shit. And this is something I want to explore more. And this is something I really want, because I'm just so, I see it so much in my program. And I want to learn more about
this. I wonder though, Curtis, if this is, it's more extreme with League though specifically because of people's perception of high ELO, low ELO and the streamers and that sort of stuff. Because you're seeing it all the time of like a challenger streamer saying his teammates are like bronze players, and then they're in bronze. It's like, well, how's that possible? How does that? I think League specifically is more extreme. Like, let's do a thought experiment here, Curtis. What happens if you were pursuing, you know, trying to be a chef, right? And you happen to have on stream like Michelin star restaurant, just all streamed, right? And you could just go on, just watch this, you know, stream of a Michelin star restaurant, you know, operating. And you're seeing like, you know, the head chef, like literally firing this cook because they're just not good enough. They just suck. And then this is a person that got to work in the Michelin star restaurant who is now out, and you're sitting there like learning. It's like, how can I, I'm getting, like, that guy's getting fired. How can I possibly keep, you know, sort of what I'm saying here? Imagine if that was that for other disciplines. I think League, because it's online, because the rank system is the way it is, because everyone who, most people that have gotten to high elo really quick, you don't recognize this, but they started training as a League player when they were 9 years old on the PC playing some, like, you get tricked so easily in League with comparisons.
But I would also say with League, why it's more brutal is because the skill set's not clearly defined.
It's not clearly defined, and also looks really basic as well, isn't it? Like, every mistake is basic.
Like, if you see a Michelin, let's go back to your metaphor here, your analogy. If you see a Michelin star chef get fired because they're not good enough, you'd be able to clearly see the error, and you'd be able to clearly see what they're better at than you.
Yeah,
it'd be so clear. It'd be like, well, this guy's like chopping shit like incredibly fine, like he's just way better at chopping, like you can just see it clearly, like it's in front of your face. Or like, this guy like is doing, he's cooking this dish that I wouldn't even be able to remotely attempt, whereas like in League, you can, you know what I mean, like No, the analogy is good because I think it shows why League is difficult. Because it's like, you look at this player, this streamer called Master Tier player trash, but then, like, but that guy, you wouldn't even be able to tell why. You know what I mean? Like, you don't even know what the clear distinction is between, like, what a platinum and an emerald and a diamond and a master.
No, but what they see, though, is that Master Tier player failing flash into a wall. That's what they see, though. What are you talking about?
Right. Yeah, but again, I just think that it's easier for the real life situation because again, there's no confusion as to why that guy's in a Michelin star restaurant. Whereas I genuinely think, again, we see this all the time. People are delusional. They don't even know what a Master Tier player is. You don't even know the average person doesn't even know what it takes to climb.
Yeah, no.
They don't even know what skills to develop. Yeah.
And it's very easy to look at a certain point of the game and say that player.
Yeah.
The trouble is people think they know what a Master Tier player. They'll watch it like, oh, I should be Master Tier.
That's right. You hear that all the time. Yeah. Exactly. But you don't hear that.
I guess you wouldn't. And even in traditional sports, like,
I mean,
you'd see the physique and the speed and the athleticism, and you just would see that in League at all, would you?
Well, you wouldn't really hear other athletes say that. You hear the average spectator that has no idea about the sport all the time, right?
That's
like,
true.
Yeah, the guy in the stands, I could do that, I could kick that goal. But, like, an athlete would never say that because they would understand, you know, someone who plays the sport would actually understand what they're doing.
I think that's the beauty of League, though, because it's so limited, though, Curtis, with
four
buttons,
right?
You know, four mostly, a mouse. Theoretically, anyone anything's can possible. Emulate it's, well, theoretically, it's just very emulate. Like I can do exactly what Faker did in this exact situation, but there's all the other elements of that's what actually makes the game beautiful, or gaming in general, I think.
Right, yeah, the low barrier to entry.
The low barrier to entry, extreme low barrier to entry,
Yeah, I mean, there's something we've got to explore. There's definitely something we've got to explore. I think it's a really important theme. I don't know. I don't have all the answers, but I just think it's an important thing, and I see it all the time, and I think it's our responsibility. People, I mean, we're in a position where we are, whether or not we are aware of it, we are role models to a lot of people. There are a lot of people listening to this or tune in every now and then, and I think we have an opportunity to really help people for the better.
I think our job, Curtis, is to make League more digestible, make it people understand the game more. I think we're in early days.
No, totally. That and be human. Like, I'm not going to sit here and pretend that we're not mental monks.
Yeah.
I don't like the idea.
We've talked about our challenges in this,
and we need to continue to do so.
Yeah.
I think it's super important.
I agree. Maybe we don't do it enough.
All right, move it on.
Yes, I wanted to highlight... we talked a little about this podcast about level of play, accepting level of play. Owen, who recently joined my program back, and he was D3 one day earlier this week, and then he just posted in the ranked team saying he got Diamond 1. He says, this is where I have ego because I was playing in Master Lobbies and think I can play whatever champ I want. And he linked his match history here and he's just playing Vi, Viego, got a Rumble Jungle game, Kindred, Zac, Rek'Sai, Gragas, right? So, you know, this is the typical, you know, player. Oh, I'm just going to play whatever I want because I'm just really confident. I'm just an ego player, right? And then he says, here's when I dropped the ego and went back to my champ mastery. And he's only playing two champs, Zac and Rek'Sai, in like one volleyball game. And just showing this absolute difference here. Obviously demonstrating champ mastery, which we always talk on this podcast. But the topic that I want to hear, Curtis, is just, it's so, because he knows this. He's been in my program. He's listened to this podcast for years. You get ego so quick in League of Legends. And the beauty about the game is it humbles you really quick. When you start disrespecting the fundamentals, when you're just playing every champ, you think you can play every champ in the game, you're not getting specific because there's so many elements to champ mastery. Ego, Curtis. Easy to get ego in League of Legends. Bit of a reminder.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think this comes into the whole discussion of learning to win. We talk about learning to lose.
Very important.
But learning to win. I think learning to win is equally important to learning to lose. And
people discount the wins real quick. They're like, oh, I must be just be doing everything right and stuff like that. But, you know, you got to still look at your wins. Why am I winning? Break down why am I winning exactly the same as you would be losing? Because, you know, you're probably making lots of game losing mistakes.
Again, the way I view it is that when people win a lot, especially when they win a few games in a row, it's kind of like, yeah, it's kind of as if they get sloppy with process very, very easily.
For example, Owen here. So he gets the Master Tier. plays in Master Tier. He wasn't actually Master Tier. You know, D1 Master Tier lobbies, thinks he's the greatest player in the world, starts playing every champ, goes down to D3, brings it back again to Fundamentals and Champ Mastery, gets back down to Diamond 1 with Master Tier lobbies.
Look, I do think that this sort of experience for him is important because it's a humbling experience. I think League...
This experience everyone needs
to go through. Everyone has to go through this period. Yeah. Like, you're going to go through this time where you're feeling really confident. And look, at the end of the day, right, you know, we talk about learning to win. And what I mean by learning to win means you're still able to keep your head down, focus on the learnings, identify, did you do your job? Did you just get lucky? Right? Did you take skirmishes and make decisions that are fundamentally poor and you got away with it? Are you still reviewing and all that stuff? Are you still sticking to your champ pool and three blocks? Like, that's how you look, you know, you got to learn to win, right? Discipline, that sort of thing. But I think that there's an element of, you know, it's good to have a lot of confidence, right? And you know, as a coach, sometimes when I see someone that like they're feeling themselves, they're getting really cocky, you know, sometimes I just let it happen.
Yeah, you got to let it happen. We say League is a confidence-based game, right? It is.
And I think this experience, obviously you probably see it. If you heard him probably talk about this and saw this, you probably would have seen this coming a mile away.
Yeah.
But sometimes I just like to let it happen. Let the train crash happen.
You do need to.
They're going
to
get humbled. They're going to go through a painful experience. But this is the learning. The learning big picture in the grand scheme of that whole week or 2 weeks or whatever the hell it was is, oh shit, yeah, I'm not as good as I think I am. Oh yeah, I'm not too good for the process. Yeah, I need to be a little bit more disciplined and not get sloppy with my champ pool, et cetera, et cetera. And I think this whole, you're spot on. I think this is something we all need to do. It's going to happen. No matter how in control of your emotions you think you are, it's happened to me, it's happened to you, it's happened to all of us. Very, very important. Good reminder.
Let the train run its tracks, Curtis.
Yep.
All right, so Curtis, we're starting a new segment on this podcast. We wanted to add in maybe some more gameplay. You might be a Spotify or Apple podcast listener and be like, oh God, this is where I got to tune out here. But, you know, we talk about getting to the details. We think it might be cool to look at a comparison between we're going to call this low ELO versus high ELO. Comparing similar situations, similar champion, what it looks like in maybe, you know, like a gold game or whatever, and what it looks like at Master Tier Plus or Challenger level. Let us know what you think of this first try. We're going to have a crack.
We're experimenting.
Experimenting. Let us know.
If you think this is an interesting segment and worth our time, and you think this is better than maybe an additional topic, then we'll continue to do that. So let us know in the comments below. All
right, so we'll have a crack, as we like to say at this one, Curtis. All right, so I've had a couple of Blue Cane game reviews, Curtis, this week in my program. I guess we can think about a bigger picture here, Curtis. Think about the assassin mindset. How to win games as an assassin? We've talked a bit before about how assassins are probably one of the harder class in League of Legends because you need to really play the fog of war game a bit more. You know, tanks.
Well, exist. It's interesting because I think it's a bit. Honestly, because I did my Echo Guide recently for Nameless, and I'm doing Vex at the moment, right? I'm honestly sometimes feel that the reference points are very clear for assassins.
Maybe they are. Maybe just I think execution. They're not intuitive though to it's the way intuitive. Games. Right?
Fog of War's not intuitive. Yeah. I agree. Fog of War's not intuitive. But I think once you get it.
You are right. Actually,
reference point wise.
I think that's what we're going to see in these clips here.
Okay.
So this is my first clip here from Nick. This is Emerald. So we'll start with the high elo, and then we're going to look at low elo, and then we'll look at high elo. So this is Emerald 4, I think it is.
Okay.
So playing Blue Cane here. We're sprinting it down to mid. We're running at them face first here. Trying to get on them. Hits a W, goes for an ult on the Blitzcrank. And then just gets absolute one shot and killed, right?
Yep.
So, you know, we're seeing here what playing around mid might look like a bit more. Like, you know, what happens when you're spotted and you just clearly run into them? Let's see the level of threat. Okay, so we're going to have another couple of examples here, and then we'll look at the high elo, look at the difference in these way these Cane players play the game. All right, another Emerald game, Blue Cane. This is Justin. So similar situation. We're sort of panning around mid a little bit. And, you know, we're sort of fishing. We're obviously spotted, right? Position compromised. Everyone knows where we are. We're not playing, you know, it's not a suspicion of where Cane is right now. This is probably the cardinal sin right now we're about to see, Curtis.
This is already a cardinal sin.
Hitting a ward with enemy team all missing. Gets his Zara killed. almost dies himself, has to burn flash. No, doesn't have to burn flash, but he gets away. Similar point in this exact same game. What we'll see here is sort of, again, sort of hovering around mid a little bit here.
Definitely likes mid.
Yes, does like mid, indeed. Indeed, Curtis. This is, you're seeing a trend here, aren't you? Trying to, like, you know, force some tower dive there, has no ults. Look at this Caitlyn in the sideline, by the way, here, just chilling by herself. Actually, that's something also to note as well, Curtis, here, is that at that 22-minute mark here, if I actually forgot to point out, oh no, Caitlyn, I think Caitlyn pushed a wave in bot when we died. Oh, that was another situation. Died. All right, anyways. So looking around mid here, Curtis.
Yep.
All right. So now comparing to our high elo examples, so this is Karasmai. He's a, you know, been challenger many times as Kane, famous streamer, plays blue Kane pretty much exclusively. What I want to do here is we're going to go through a 9-minute segment here, Curtis. I'm just going to skip through a lot of it. Let's see where he is and how he's getting his kills. So this is a game, you know, he's playing in a high elo game here, right? So it's not like he's just like smurfing and stuff like that. All right, so we're doing grubs here. We go top. We kill the Gnar. Zed roams up. We kill Zed. So let's just pay attention to also where he is. I don't really care about exactly what's going on here. Where he is. And see how much is he around mid lane compared to our examples that we saw before. So we're just clearing some camps. Doesn't see anything bot. Clears up towards top. I'm just looking at the minimap by the way, time, guys. When you review these VODs, just sort of look at the minimap. Goes another back bot. Yep. Oh, I should note that he killed the Nami here. Just nice one-shot combo there. Doesn't have to ult. Resets. Doesn't sort of waste his time around here. Goes to the other side of the map. Goes back top again here. So this is, you know, 4 minutes in. Dies top there, but it's fine, you know. Waste some of their time. The Vayne. Clear, clear, clear. Full clears bot to top here. Comes up top. Comes and kills the Gnar again. Takes the Herald.
Straight back bot.
Straight back bot. Goes bot. Kills Zed hit in the tower. Just this constant. Going bot. Get a kill. Go top. Get a kill. And it gets even more exciting here. This is probably my favorite part of the clip here. So he goes just top, just killing Nards, falling over himself here. And this is a bit of a hard game as well. You know, like his team's losing here. You know, he's 15-60. He's a pure carry here. Now, this is where everyone right now would go mid here, by the way. Looking at our example here. We're 18 minutes of the game. There's fighting going on mid. Look at what Crespo does. He doesn't even care at all. His ult is just pushing side lane here. Just goes, takes the Herald. I mean, the top tower. He drags the enemy team all here. I think four people come here. And then he gets away, just wastes all their time and grabs this massive pressure bot. All right, so this is basically a, you know, a 10-minute sequence of showing here he wasn't mid once. Demonstrating the assassin mindset, you know, talking about the sort of reference points here. And this is what I want you guys to do, sort of when you look at, you could do that exact exercise that I just did there. When you're looking at the high elo versus, you know, like, you know, watching the high elo person of your champion, see where exactly maybe they are on the map, you know, the way they're sort of playing lanes. You can actually quickly speed through a sort of a macro sense, I feel like, of the game. Maybe it's more of a jungle specific thing. I think it's more of a
jungle thing. Yeah.
Maybe it's more of a jungle thing. I thought that was interesting to just the comparison between the way that they were playing their mid games as the blue cane, you know, sitting around mid trying to force show and envision constantly versus make play out of vision, go next side lane. It just was not going around mid at all.
Yeah, no, totally. You see that a lot. I think Fog of War is a concept that a lot of people struggle with because they think, oh, there's something happening here. I've got to go here immediately. And they don't think about, okay, well, where do I need to be? Again, it's that second order thing. It's like, if I show here, everyone's going to know where I am. I'm not going to be able to get onto the back line because the way I view it at a high level is what I'm obsessed about in my program is, what is my job? What's my job? What does my champion fundamentally want to do? Well, I'm assuming with Blue Kane, you want to be getting onto the back line. You want to be getting onto the squishies. You want to be coming in from the side.
Taking off guard. No, I'm running at them straight.
You want to either create man advantages or picks, or you want to. You never want to be sitting in a straight front to back 5v5 because you can't get through the front line. And if they see you, they're going to be able to prime their CC, peel back, and you're going to be useless.
Even if they see you initially and they see which side of the map you walk to, then the air backline could just hover on the other side of the map. So they need to know which direction. They need to, you can't let them know which direction you're coming from.
It's really interesting because the way I view a lot of this, because you can review this from at a very kind of surface level, like, oh, I shouldn't be mid, or I shouldn't be showing like this. And yeah, that's objectively true, but you get way more value, I reckon, from saying, well, again, what am I trying to achieve? Right? If we have an idea of what the end goal is, the how is very easy to fix. Right? So the what we're trying to do is more important than the how, in a way. Most people, in my opinion, don't struggle with the how when they know what to do. When they don't know what to do, that's when you see shit like that. Those kids, I reckon, in those kids, of those situations, they were not using their lull states. They actually had no idea about what they were trying to do. Because when you're playing champs like this, it's all about neutral objectives as well. Because neutral objectives give you those better angles. You're in the river, you're in the jungle, you have better flanks, side lanes, obviously.
You know where they're walking. You know they're going to be like, you know, rotating.
Exactly. So neutral objectives, side lane. And then that sort of like fighting in the jungle, that sort of thing. But again, it ties in, what am I trying to do? Oh yeah, I'm trying to get into the back line. Am I going to be able to get on the back line when they're just aiming mid? Maybe not. So then therefore, it's like, okay, if we're not going to win the front to back, maybe I can just trade off this neutral. Maybe I can just give it. Maybe if they're A-ramming, it's okay. Let's just give this one dragon. Let's shove outside, because then there'll be an opportunity for me to create a man advantage, get onto the back line, kill a squishy. Now, that's going back to the how, that's a creative solution. But again, if you understand the what, it's not that much of a stretch to come to that conclusion, is it? But it's only a stretch to come to that conclusion if you don't know what the hell you're trying to achieve. It's
like reverse engineering.
Exactly. So I think that, you know, obviously Charizmai here, he's what he wants to do is so clear. It's just autopilot. He can do this autopiloting. He is one with his champion. When you're one with your champion, you just know exactly what you need to do.
Where I need to be looking for.
Yeah. These boxes. These are the clear boxes that I need to tick. That's it. And it's okay to make... Okay, this is one tangent here I think is super important, is that I feel like, especially in my... Yeah, MLS, lower below plat program, people have this feeling, and even actually, and I'll say in the MLA and Emerald as well, they feel like they need to do so much. You know, I cannot stress this enough. One of the most pragmatic pieces of advice I will give someone. League, in order to win League, you don't have to do everything. You just got to do your goddamn job. Just do what, it's like you have a job description when you sign up to like a job, just do that. If you just do your job really well, or it's like you're in university and you get like the rubric or whatever, and it tells you, how do you get an A? It tells you, okay, we score you an A+ if you do these things. It's like, it's the answers in front of you. You just got to do that.
Yeah. The rebuttal I hear though, Curtis, is that they're afraid that they have to go above and beyond what their job description is because their teammates aren't going to be doing their jobs. That's not true. Because the problem is that when you start doing their job, you're not doing your job anymore.
A lot of the time.
Yes.
Yeah, and look, when you're playing at a very high level, there are moments where you might want to do someone else or help someone else do their job, whatever. But we can worry about that way later in your journey. Let's get extremely good at our job first.
That's exactly right. That's our mindset.
And then we can min-max all the other things. Yeah. That's what it ties into, min-maxing. I had someone who promoted to the MLA, and they're in this mindset of min-maxing drafts, min-maxing items, min-maxing everything. No. And it's like, dude, you're in platinum, okay? We just got to know your matchups, have a consistent first 8 minutes, understand your reference points, and have basic solid team fighting skirmishing. That's going to get you to Emerald. I guarantee you. You don't need to min-max jack shit. You know what?
That will also get you to Diamond.
That can get you to Diamond.
And Master Tier.
Yes.
That's right.
If you do it really well.
Yeah.
Yep.
Honestly, as a Challenger player, I was focusing on that a lot last year.
Right.
Just I forgot what my role was in fights as Rek'Sai. And then I just fixed that up and there I'm
going.
But
it's just so hard for people to reconcile with that. Because you're spot on. They think, and again, I think the main reason they have that counter argument is that they're trying to win every single game. They're not okay.
Yeah, playing losing quick. Yeah,
I did some Vex live commentaries recently, and I had some really hard Vex games. Right, like a bad Vex game. What a bad Vex game is when you have no multi-threat. So I had this combo. I think it was like Senatarm, Nidalee, I think it was Garen. Garen lost lane, Nidalee got behind early. I'm a Vex. And because we had double AP mid jungle, our AD is behind. So they're getting MR. I can't one-shot anyone. And I've got no multi-threat. Yep. So by multi-threat, I mean people that are diving in. That's what Vex loves. That's why Vex loves champs like Kha'Zix and Viego and champs that are just going in that are AD, right?
So the way you would view that game is that unless I play perfectly and have a massive lead where they can't
but get even then, resist,
it's going to be very hard.
So, yeah. So what I did, right, and when I was doing the live commentary, is I'm like, all right. I'm just going to go out there and I'm just going to make it hard for them to win. I know I'm probably not going to win, but I'm going to go down, make them sweat for their LP, do the job to the best of my ability. I think I came out of the game like 7-3. I think I played really well. We lost. We got stomped. I'm like, I played well.
Yep.
Great. I'm not so upset about that. I looked at maybe one or two moments where I could have done better. I'm like, I'm not overcomplicating this game. Boom, move on. That is how you climb in League of Legends.
That's right.
Don't compromise on your job. Your job is your job.
It's because that mindset, as you said, that's the key mindset. It's because they're trying to figure out how to win every game. Yep.
They're trying to go.
You'll lose your mind. If you start trying to problem solve that way, you'll not get anywhere in League of Legends.
Oh, that's
your tilt.
Yeah.
You'll blame external mental, factors. You'll implode. Explode. Yeah.
You will implode very quickly.
Implode, explode.
Yeah.
Implode and simultaneously explode.
Yeah.
It'll be messy. The walls will be.
Yeah, it'll be not good. All right, do you want to move to Summoner School?
Summoner School time here, Curtis. All right, today's post is from Kozinaki. The title of this post is, how does Faker manage to perform so well while playing so many different champions? So this is a good contrast to before, Curtis, where we had the example from Owen playing, thought he could play every champion, and then playing... going back to his Rek'Sai and Zac and having much more success. So people know that. People know the importance of champ mastery. We want to know why. How does Faker manage to do that, Curtis? So the title is basically the first question that I'd like to talk about. Throughout all my league journey, I've been hearing that being an OTP or having a narrow champ pool is a must if you want to take the game seriously and actually start to climb. However, watching Faker play, I realized that he's able to play a decent amount of champs and still be the best or potentially the best league player. How does he do that? Does that come with experience of playing League for so many years? At the end, I have two main questions. Is it actually necessary to be an OTP having a small champ pool? And the second is, how is Faker able to crush his opponents on many different champions? Do you want to read the top comment, Curtis?
Or? Okay, we got there's a top, but yeah, so I think that this is a great question.
About this first.
And then what we'll read this top comment because it's got a lot of upvotes. It has 435 upvotes, and then we'll maybe riff off this, okay. I guess. So top comment here says, one of the key differences between you and Faker, or like any pro player, is the time you effectively spend on League. If we strictly compare ourselves with pros, most of our game time are wasted. And on top of that, our game hours are just a fraction of a pro player's. Pro players play this game for a full-time job. They probably even do overtime. Do you play this game full-time? I mean, don't you study or work? Even if you are very close to a pro player in terms of gaming hours, let's say every day you only play 2 hours less than a pro, which is already crazy, but that 2 hours a day over the course of a year is like 700 hours difference. Let's say the average game time is 30 minutes. That's like, you know, more than 1,400 games or something like that. Even if your game time is similar, what you actually learn and practice are not anywhere near pros. They have rigorous training programs, professional coaches helping them, professional analysts helping them with data and analysis. Also, pro player themselves know this game far more than you do already. So every hour they play is probably worth 10 hours of your game time. So at the end of the year, they can have the capacity to master 5 to 10 champs, for example. For you, even if you manage to master one champ, that would be a good result. So OTP champ mastery is true. The difference between you and pro players is the scale of it.
It's interesting because that post, I don't even know that top comment. Because part of being a pro player, yes, time is important, but they're actually much better at learning the game than the average player. Agreed. That's the thing. Like, that's just all focused on time. That's a fraction.
Okay, so like,
really,
okay,
is.
Objectively, time is a factor.
Yes, of course.
Right. So all of the all of the pro players have put a shit ton of time into the game. That's like a prerequisite. Like, if you're just not going to be a pro player unless you've played a metric ton of hours and you're obsessed about the game and you've played a shit ton of it, okay? So that's a fact. But there are a lot of solo queue players that have played more, right? That is the reality. There are people, you go to like time wasted on League, that site, there are people that have played way more than the pro players, right? So I think we can effectively rule that it's just one factor, okay? You're spot on. It's the way they learn. And that's what makes these players special. Right now, this opens a whole can of worms, but like, I think
it's also the talent conversation.
Okay, so let's get into that, right? Like, very, very basically, the ability to play multiple champions to a high level is probably, I would actually, an argument could be made for that to be the most valuable skill in League of Legends.
To play multiple champions.
At a high level.
Of course,
yeah. That is probably, and again, it doesn't really matter whether it is or isn't,
yeah.
But I would argue,
I would agree with that.
That is probably the most valuable skill, the hardest and most insane, but most important skill for a pro player.
Yeah.
That is it, flat out. And there are not many people in the world that can do that. There are just not many. There are players that are, you know, even at a pro level that struggle to do that.
They're known for not being too good at certain style of champions.
That's right. There was that big criticism of APA, I think, was it at Worlds, where he could only play five champions or something. And that is the reality. Most pro players can't play that many. That is what makes Faker a freak. His ability to learn champions and play them to a high level is fucking insane. He's an animal. And his ability to learn effectively and efficiently is crazy. Now, and this is where the talent, you know, conversation really comes into play. But talent, in my opinion, is, in this case, it's a love of the game. And that's why I think Caps can do it as well. Because there's a passion. There's an absolute obsession about the game. Like, they're not thinking about anything else. Like, they're just thinking about League. And they've done that for a metric ton of time, right? So there's that. The gaming background, extensive gaming background, probably just great at games in general, had a competitive gaming background before that, played a lot of games when they were younger. And again, their ability to, I think, process and gather information and do those miniature reviews, learn from other people. Like, or maybe they make a mistake in a game, be like, oh, yeah, that's what went wrong. And they can make that adjustment in real time, really, really quickly.
Their learning cycle is really quick.
Learning cycle is incredibly quick, incredibly efficient, and they're doing that rigorously every day. And if you play a lot of games with a rigorous learning cycle and you're obsessed and you're intense, that is how you do it.
It's a beautiful combination.
It's a beautiful combination. And that's hard. Yeah. Very, very hard to do.
In saying that, because people will say, well, why don't I start learning how to play all the champions in gold right now, right? Because it's like, well, Curtis is saying it's such a valuable skill, right? The most effective, because if you're going to be spreading yourself so thin, let's say even if you had all those boxes ticked in gold, because you're playing against players that are also making so many mistakes and that sort of stuff, the fastest way at the end of the day is you one trick or play two champs or whatever, two challenger first, then you're in challenger games, you feel challenger game pace.
And you understand the game at a challenger level. Yeah,
you have to understand. I think it's confusing sometimes what people confuse playing champs. There's two separate things. It's understanding the way your league works in champ mastery. So getting a lot of champion mastery from the get-go allows you to now think about the game.
That's right.
So until you're actually able to get to the level of champ mastery where you don't have to think about the champion anymore, then you can think about the game. Then you actually understand and learn league properly. Then you can go learn other champions.
It does become easier to learn other champions, though, the better you get at the game. Correct. Way, way better.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Way, way, way better.
That's why you'd see any challenger player, let's say if you've been a Katarina one trick for, you know,
6 years.
6 years, and you're Emerald D4, whatever. A challenger player who's never played even that role, even mid, will be better. Not maybe immediately, but will be better than you
way at faster.
Katarina. Exceptionally fast. We'll probably pick it up in like 20 games. It'll just be way better. They like dominate.
Well, even if, let's say they're top, it might take them a month.
Yeah.
They'll be better at it within a month. That's right. Because they understand the game at such a higher level. Yeah.
I think probably less than that, Curtis.
Well, you're saying it from another role.
Yeah, I think even from another role, a challenger player. Yeah. Maybe not. Maybe.
I don't know. I can't say about that. All I can say is that from a mid laner's perspective, if you've got a challenger mid laner, they could learn any champion. Yeah, genuine challenger player. They could learn a champion really. And if they put the effort in, they could learn it very fast.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's not about the champion as much as it's about understanding how the game works. Pressure, tempo, speed. Because
when you're in gold, you can only learn the game to a gold level.
That's right.
Because you're capped by you're capped by the opponents you verse.
Yep.
And that's something people don't understand. That's why ranked is so beautiful, because it's constantly like if you're gold one, you're going to be versing some platinum fours and then some gold twos, but you only get better dealing with those people that are slightly better than you. So you're very capped in terms of how quickly you can improve in league.
Exactly right.
Because you're only as good as your opponent.
Yes.
And that's why also the best solo queue servers at the top matter a lot. Because, you know, for example, you can get very, very good in, say, like NA and OS, but like there's probably levels that you can get you can't get to because the level of play in career and the competition is just better.
Level right? of lane in and game pace.
Exactly, at the highest and, level. Yeah. That's right. So yeah, like I think learning how to learn is so important, and you got to get to high elo first, and that's when you expand.
And the most efficient way to do that is through one champion. So
well, like a small champ
pool. Champ pool, so you have the muscle memory in the champ pool, so you can actually learn the game.
Yeah, and it's a tough pill to swallow that you know that the people like this exist. I mean, when you get and this is the thing I tell people, you know, when you verse these players. You know, people can match up against them. Like I've done reviews with people in the MLA. I did a review with someone, then they versus Showmaker when Showmaker was boot camping in Europe. Mm. They can hold their own. Mm. And like you'll get players that are better than Faker at particular champions. What makes Faker special is that he's able to play all of those champions at like a 95% level. But you get some one tricks in some, you know, people who have a lot of champ mastery in Challenger, they'll be better than Faker. They can beat Faker in lane.
Of course, yeah.
I don't think
Faker's been ranked one in solo queue for
no,
years.
No, he's not
now,
an yeah. amazing solo queue player because he spreads himself too thin. Mm. In solo queue, you have to be, a lot of the time, like a specialist in champ. You have to be incredibly good at your champion, right?
Yep.
And he just plays every champion. Like, he swaps all the time. So, my point being is that, like, it's not like Faker's, you know, he's at, like, that 100% champ mastery on every champion. No, he's just at an incredibly high level on all these champions.
And the flexibility of that in draft and his understanding of everything outweigh
unbelievable.
That 95%, you know, yeah. like...
Your ability to adapt to all the different drafts and all the different metas is what separates you.
Yeah.
And that's so big.
I mean, a lot of pro players' careers don't last long because they do struggle to adapt. That's part of the reason why Faker's he's been able to adapt to every state of the game, every patch. But actually, he's had his bad patches, obviously, but like, you know, over time. Yeah.
Man, he stood the test of time.
That's right.
Really impressive. Move on to Curtis's clips.
Yep.
Let's get into the details, guys. And welcome, everyone, to Curtis's Clip Corner. Okay, so to set the scene here, we have ourselves a Qiyana player. I believe this was in Diamond, maybe like mid to high Diamond, maybe D2, D3, I believe. Now, the situation is that you're in a good spot, right? You've got a 4-0 Shaco on the team. They're 2-0. They've got, you know, 1,400 gold in their back pocket, doing a very good job, right? And so typically, you know, Qiyana's reference points all about playing around neutral objectives, right? You want to play with your secondary win condition. In this case, you've got a beautiful kind of AP AD duo, AP Shaco. We're really strong. Get a good quality reset. You know, start prepping for the next neutral objective, which is, I'm assuming, maybe going to be the dragon. That'll be second dragon. Great. Game's looking good. Game's looking pretty free, right? We're going to win every single 2v2. You can't lose a 2v2 as long as you play with your jungler, okay? And so anyway, we'll fast forward a little bit here. He's sitting on 1,500 gold, stays for another wave, and then sees the Sylas in the river and decides, you know what? Let's go for this. Rakan's there. Let's go for this. Our jungler's in base.
Yep.
And you know, inevitably, this looks like a disastrous situation. We mess it up, I think, a little bit mechanically, but we're never going to get the kill anyway. We bait ourselves, our team, into a shitty situation. We've missed our reset window. Now, our Shaco's coming back, compensating for us. It just turns into an absolute disaster.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, in hindsight, the right play would be, why the hell are we doing for this? We missed a reset window. We lost sight of our big picture. We didn't use the lol stage to remind ourselves what our job was, what the reference points are, what's next, all that stuff. We've covered this 1,000 times. The point that I want to make here is this. I've noticed a trend with diamond assassin players, okay?
Ooh, yeah.
This is what I've noticed now.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can see this, Curtis.
So what happens is I'm just gonna take Qiyana as an example, but let's even take this other example. Say Akali, Zed. Talon, Zed, whatever.
Right? Not even just melee mids. I'm gonna say melee mids,
but let's get this. This is gonna be very clear because I think you might think I'm going in one direction. We'll see. It might be different.
Yeah.
When you're climbing as an assassin mid player through platinum, through emerald, and you start to get to diamond, you have this idea or this belief that my champion can solo kill people.
I can kill anyone on the
board. I can kill anyone. I'm getting ahead early because a lot of people in the Platinum and Emerald, they don't have super sophisticated matchup understanding. People's tethering and spacing is not amazing. You can play Talon and Emerald and Platinum and get regular like passive procs into Brain Champions, which is crazy.
I see.
Which is illegal. Right, and so what happens is shapes your belief of what the champion is fundamentally capable of. So you're like, I'm climbing, I'm getting better, and you're getting there.
I'm getting lots of kills and
heaps of kills, and you believe that your champion is all about getting solid kills and is about getting snowballed from the early game, snowballing beautifully out of control and doing whatever the hell you want. What happens is you hit this roadblock, this massive brick wall just forms. It could be around Diamond 2, it could be around Low Master, whatever it is. I've noticed this with players. And they're like, Curtis, what the hell? I'm losing every game. I can't win. Games feel out of my control, blah, 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 blah. And what I've noticed is that it's the same thing. The Talon players now have this rude awakening, or the Qiyana players have this rude awakening where, holy shit, I can't even get my damage up. I'm getting dominated in lane. I'm getting shit on. And then you realize, holy shit, Qiyana is a dog shit laner. Talon is a dog shit laner. These champions are dog shit laners. When you start to first people that are competent in the matchups, they will tether you. They'll take bone plating. They'll slow build waves. They won't die to ganks. They will kick you. They'll kick your ass. And so what happens, you're like, oh my God, am I just bad? Are these players just way better than me? No. You just have a misinterpretation of your champ's identity. Now, you have to evolve. And now I see this. This is really pronounced specifically with assassin players because you go from getting solo kills in lane and getting ahead and having a great lane phase to, wow, I actually have to sit here and minimize, take good resets, focus on playing with my jungler.
You have to sweat to get every kill. You have to really figure it out.
You have to be really on point with your fundamentals. You have to learn how to minimize and neutralize. This is a different mindset. This is a different champion. You have to take different setups.
Mm.
And this is where a lot of people lose their mind. They think that they're just shit. No, you just got the wrong game plan. Because if you try it,
you've sort of learned the wrong way. Is that
I'm not saying you learned the wrong way. I think it's just an interesting phenomenon because what got you to Diamond a lot of the time with an assassin won't actually get you to Master tier or to Grandmaster.
Mm.
And this is very interesting because you know how we say you just got to do your job. With assassins, specifically with lane phase, no, there's actually a lot of change. And your actual champion identity in many ways and the way the whole early game functions evolves. And this is one of the beauties of the rank system that people don't understand. People think that what got me from A to B is going to get me from B to C. And for some champions and in some cases, yeah, that will be the case. For sometimes that's not going to be the case because the way a champion functions in a particular elo bracket isn't always the same. The way Talon functions in gold and plat is not how Talon functions in diamond and master. How LeBlanc functions in gold and plat is not how the champ functions in master and grandmaster. And this is why you got to be super open-minded, super curious. And this is a benefit of coaching. If he didn't come in and I didn't tell him this, he would have been smashing his head against the wall for who knows how
long. Time, yeah.
Now, I thought this was just a fascinating phenomenon and mindset, and that's what I think shapes a lot of these decisions. They're in this mindset of just I can do whatever I want. I don't need to care about resets. I just need to think about, you know, just killing shit.
Because you're right,
it's ego.
Because I feel like if this was a mage player right now, right, if this was Azir that I'm watching right now, they see Silas Roman up here, right? Like they're not gonna just run on him full combo ult, right? Like you would never see that. No. You know what I mean? He'll just be sitting there clearing the wave and love that,
because
right?
It's a different skill set you would learn with Azir as well.
Yeah.
You wouldn't get this sort of problem.
I mean, the way that I think about it, more of like a defensive sort of mindset. Again, we identified that Shaker was 4-0 because I observe this all the time because I observe mid laners. That's all I do. Really, all I do in my job, my day-to-day job, is observing what laners' behavior is, right? And I learn a lot from what people's teammates are doing, reviews of my own games, right? I mean, if I'm Shaker, right, if you're Qiyana, just be like, okay, my Shaker is my strongest member. I need to be making plays with him.
Mm-hmm.
It's really simple. It's that simple. People like overcomplicate and big game think you do crazy strategies. Yeah, it's like really your Shaker in base, your thing. Like even if you can kill Silas, it's not necessary because you want to be with Shaker killing him and then Shaker can invade and take camps and stuff like that. But now you're just going to be
desynced
the whole time. So you can't get
value. This is what you're spot on. This is what I say all the time in my coaching, but the the challenge people face, Nathan, is the mental sack overload. Now, in this case, he has no excuse. He's not even interacting.
No.
What you'll see, though, is that they're trading in lane, so that they haven't been able to look at the minimap.
Their tunnel vision. Their vision is that circle of the lane.
That's right. You're so focused on trading and minmaxing. You're trading in your matchups and your waves and everything. You look up and you're like, what the fuck? My jungler's ganking top. Oh, shit. You don't even realize. Yeah. That's the challenge of mid lane. Mm. The challenge of mid lane is managing that mental stack, and that's the difficulty.
It is,
because it's easy for a jungler, like, you're not interacting with anyone, you're getting jungle camps,
which is why the importance of the lull states is so important. Coming out
for,
of base
for mid laners, lull states is just huge,
and pushing a wave and stuff like that. Yeah,
that's right.
All right,
moving on.
Great example. I love when I see this, because this confirms all my observations from my melee mids. I'll see this with, because what I do as a jungler, I always say, if you're against an Aurelia or a Talon, stuff like that, you just hover. They go in all the time. Yep. It's free kills every time. It's actually especially really Yasuo. Easy. Yasuo as well. It's really easy to actually win games against these players because they only have one mode in.
In the lower elo brackets, for sure.
Yeah.
It gets a little bit more nuanced Master Plus, but like definitely below Master.
Yeah. My in Diamond, I'll see it all the time.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, mailbag time, Curtis. What do I say again? It feels like
forever. Away.
Away we go. Jingle, jingle, jingle song. Alrighty then. Our first question here comes from Jawsy. Now, the title of this email is Imposter Syndrome, Ego, and Champion Conflicts. Hi, Nathan and Curtis. I'm a long-time player, been playing on and off since Season 5, right when the map changed, but never climbed above gold. I remember placing silver in my first ever ranked climb and not really rising from that for a good few years. Eventually, I found Nisa's content, which gave me some direction, and I ended up getting myself to gold, but felt like I hit a wall. I've been feeling like a failure in League because I've been playing so long with nothing to show for it. I watch a lot of pro analytical content as well as coaching content, but I've never really been able to execute in my own ranked games. It's frustrating because I felt like I should know what I'm doing, but clearly not. Now we come to Season 14. I've been having the itch to play some League of Legends again. After finishing my placements and yet again ending up in silver, I ended up finding Curtis's mid lane content when looking for more ways to improve. I started watching the podcast and decided to take the plunge and enroll in the MLS. And here's where things get interesting. I went from silver 4 to platinum 2 in 11 days. My highest ever rank, and I'm still climbing, up to 92 LP in platinum 2. All this time I believed I was capable of getting to higher ranks, yet now that it's happening, I feel like a fraud. I am playing 3 blocks and reviewing, making physical notes on matchups, etc. in my journal, but it all feels too fast to be a result of the process. I also haven't been playing an MLS-approved champion, and herein lies my second problem. I started playing Katarina a few years ago, just to finish getting her to Mastery 7, got to Mastery 5 pre-work, but absolutely fell in love with the champion. Even when I'm losing, I just found her so engaging to play. In all previous seasons, I have negative win rate with her, but this season I have a 56% win rate so far. Not anything crazy, but a huge improvement up from 44% from previous seasons. However, I can't help but feel if I was playing Akali instead, another champion that I click really well with and have historically had an above 60% win rate on, I'll be able to climb much faster and see my true potential. All in all, here are my questions. How do you balance telling yourself you deserve to be where you are to ward off imposter syndrome without swelling your ego and feeling like you're so much better than people below you? Example, I can't help but feel like I know better than my friends who are still silver and below, but also I don't want to talk myself down to that level as if I still belong there. Would you recommend sticking with Kat and having a harder, more niche climbing experience, or maining Akali and boosting myself with a busted champion? I'm worried that I will climb too high for my skill level on Kat and lock myself out of the champions I have most fun with. And then he says, thanks for taking the time to read the email, and also a huge shout out to Curtis for being so active and engaged on the MLS Discord. I can only imagine how much you have on your plate, but it's so motivating to see personal interactions and involvement. The MLS is such a welcoming and positive experience all around, and it's a testament to the attitude of the creators.
So this email was actually, I just looked at the date, Feb 3rd. Okay.
Yep.
So he actually joined the MLA. He promoted from the MLA because he's playing Akali.
I see. So he's gone down this
right, route. And okay. he's like, I think he's like low plat, like P3 or P4 or something like that, right? And literally today, it was today, we had a discussion about accepting where you're at, which is kind of similar to what we're talking about here today. So very interesting. So we still at, that's about nearly a month later, or like, you know, majority of the month is February 29th. Yep. And he's kind of, you know, he's there. I think he's committed to Akali from what I believe. And now I don't know 100%. I think I'm 90% sure though he's committing to Akali. Now, is he's OBGG there? Okay, yeah. Interesting. Let's take a look. Yeah, so he's Platinum 4, like I said. Let's take a look at this. So let's click on Ranked Solo Joy just so we can look at only solo queue. Let's see what he's doing. The OBGG tells all. Here, let me take a look at this. So OBGG tells all. So we had 8 hours ago, Akali, and then a Lilia jungle, and then a Seraphine. Okay, let's zoom out a little bit here, I won't zoom out. So the Akali. Played secondary top, played that. Again, still, it looks like he's weaving in Seraphine games. I'm assuming when Akali's banned. That doesn't explain the random Aurelia game here. Garen, Akali. Okay, so it is a lot of Akali, but there's a lot of weird shit going on
here. So it looks like the typical, he started focusing on Akali, and then he had some bad Akali games, and he started playing a lot of random stuff.
Yeah. So
he's a bit all over the place here.
He's a bit all over the place from what it seems like. He also took a massive break here. Look at this, by the way.
Yeah.
He had, this was 22 days, then he played 2 games, 19 days, 3, and then he took a 6-day break here. Really inconsistent. And then 2 games, he's definitely taking significant breaks here as well. So, bit all over the place. And when we look at his OPG, he's only got 20 games. 20 games of Akali, still playing Katarina. So the OPGG doesn't lie. Okay, so first things first, playing Katarina and Akali doesn't exist. Okay, you can't play both those champions.
Oh, is that right?
I mean, Katarina's an OTP champion.
Yep.
You need to OTP that champion. Yep. So you either OTP it and don't play a single other champion, or piss it off and never play it again. Okay? So that's the first problem going on here, and that could honestly explain a lot of your plateauing here. Number two, if you're going to play to Akali, who's a very hard champion, you're going to have to play a lot of games with this champion. It doesn't matter how good you were in the past. The game, it's hard. You've never played at this rank before, from what it seems like, which he hasn't. So, you know, climbing with Akali is not easy. It takes a lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of games. And then, honestly, you need to be definitive on your secondary role. Are you going to play top secondary or are you going to play jungle secondary? So you also need to be definitive on your secondary role. So, you know, one of the questions that he said in the email, which was interesting, is, you know, should I play Katarina or Akali? That was kind of what he was saying. Given the problems that you have in terms of you've played for a long time, you've got a lot of mental baggage, Katarina is probably one of the worst champions you could possibly pick out of all of the champions. I said the two worst champions you could possibly play are Yasuo and Katarina. And the reason for that is because they're very messy in terms of the learning journey. You know, the reference points aren't super, super clear. There's a lot of just skill expression. There's a lot of like min-maxing skirmishes. Learning these champions is a nightmare. It actually is. It's very painful because you've got to go deep on your skirmishing. And it's not a very pleasant learning journey. You got to really, really know your limits. So given your situation, especially if you really want to, you really want to streamline your journey and let go of the past, I think going with Akali, it's still going to be a hard journey, but doable, right? Doable. At least you have a lot clearer reference points. I think reviewing team fights is also easier. I think everything is going to be, you know, doable. So 100% Akali if that's the route you want to go down. So the second question was kind of like, how do you accept where you're at and how do you not get to like balance having confidence, I guess, in your ability, but then also not downplaying yourself? Well, I'll let you answer that question first. How do you manage? What do you recommend to your clients? How would you respond to that question?
I always just think about, because it's so easy to just wander and think, like, what's going on, big picture? I always bring it back to distract yourself with the process. Yes. Get specific and just chip away through it. Because, like, again, it's like, if you think about it, isn't it crazy that you're having these thoughts and these questions, right?
Yeah.
You're trying to think big picture. Humans are so good at doing this.
Trying to look for patterns and
stuff when you've got 20 Akali games.
20 Akali games, yeah.
You know, and you've been playing a bit of jungle, you know, and you've got 100 games. Like, it's ridiculous that you're even having these questions.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know how... It's like you can go down these rabbit holes of like, does God exist? Are we alone in the universe? Oh my God. And you like all these philosophical crazy, what's the purpose of life? Is there such thing as free will? Like you have all these fucking crazy ass questions. It's like, and you get overwhelmed. It's like, okay, what am I going to have for fucking breakfast? What time am I going to bed? You know?
What do I got to do tomorrow?
What do I got to do?
What do I got to do right now? Yeah. Live in the present.
When am I going to the gym?
Yeah.
You know, let's bring it back to the reality. And I think it can be very sexy to live up here in La La Land, and I get that. We all do that.
Trying to make sense of your journey. I mean, it is good to reflect, but you should do that after
you've done in the work.
A lot of work.
You haven't done the work yet. You've barely got any games.
It's sort of like going to the gym for like 2-3 weeks and then thinking about, is your program correct? Well, you haven't seen the results. That's the perfect way to think about it. Yeah,
spot on. And like, you just, I totally agree with you, Nathan. You know, don't even engage that question. So as soon as your mind goes to, like, you win a game and your mind goes, oh, fuck, am I just better than everyone here? Whatever yes. the question is.
Yeah.
But, okay, so how was my first 8 minutes? What can I take away? How were my trades this lane? You know, was I, you know, let's go to that team fight where we lost. Just distract, head down, head down, head down. And then later on, once you've done the head down enough, okay, then we can take a breath and, like, look up and try, you know, try to figure out where we're at. And then, okay, back down, head down, head down. If you do that long enough, you'll start to develop some really great skills and some great insights and some great knowledge and some great intuition, and you'll start to figure it out naturally over time. And that's where, when you listen to the BBC and read the articles in the MLA or MLS, that's when things will really start to make sense. If you, and from what it sounds like, he said he's watched a lot of content, watched pro play stuff, done all this stuff. If you do that for a long time without executing,
your view of the game can be quite distorted.
Yeah.
What your priorities and what you're focusing on isn't the fundamentals, the basics. It looks like you've started to realize, and once you joined MLS.
You know, at the start of this episode, I was talking about the guy that was like min-maxing stuff. Mm. This was the guy, Jawsy.
Just by chance. What a coincidence.
Literally a coincidence. Yeah. That's this guy. He was the one that was min-maxing. He's like, he's worried about like min-maxing everything. I'm like, dude, just play the game, get into the details, and then we can like, you know, min-max way later on. It was so funny in the Discord. We're having this discussion about min-maxing, and then Max, who is a Grandmaster Challenger Akshan OTP, like probably one of the best Akshans on NA, amazing player, says, is there even a rank where min-maxing is relevant? Which ties into what you said, where like you could just do the basics and get to Master tier anyway. Yeah, that's what Max, said, coming from literally.
I shouldn't even say Master. It should be like Grandmaster.
He's like legit Grandmaster Challenger doing really basic shit. Yeah. Like in a way, like you hear his thought process. It's not that sophisticated. A lot of the time he builds whatever the fuck he wants to build. And he just makes good quality decisions. And he's Challenger, right? And so how funny is that? You got a Platinum 4 player. And again, not to put him down, I'm just saying the perspective, talking about the basics of the game, and this guy's stressing over min-maxing. Let's just get great at your champion. First 8 minutes, resets, trading patterns, matchup understanding, your W usage in team fights. Are you wasting your E's? Are you dying? Look at your deaths. You're averaging 5.3 deaths a game on Akali. You know, let's get into that. Let's look at your deaths. What's going on there? And the more you can keep your head down, you don't even have to engage those questions.
No. People are great at overthinking.
And that's what I said to him. I said, let's get into the reviews with me. Come by. If you have questions, chuck it in the VOD question channel. Let's get into this. Do the work. And then we can, you know, think bigger picture. That would be my advice. So thanks for listening, and I appreciate you. But, you know, I'm here to be hard on you.
Yeah.
Right? I'm doing everything I'm saying here. It's nothing personal, because what I want is to give you the best results possible. And I know everything we said here comes from a place of, I want the best for you. And I know that if I piss fart around and we try to answer these questions, that's not going to help you. I'm saying here what is going to be the most practical, pragmatic advice that's going to get you the results. And we will get you those results. I promise you, if you just listen to what we're saying here. Because I've seen it. We've done it. I've worked with many clients like you before.
We've seen this the archetype. I call him an archetype of a person who's watched a lot of league but never executed. I have to peel back a lot for them.
That's right.
Bring them back to basics.
And don't try to win every game.
I mean, let me break that down. Yes, you got to try to win every game, but don't expect to win every game. Just do your job every game really, really well, and you'll win the majority of games.
All right, next question here comes from someone by the name of Casual Gamer. Receiving unsolicited VOD review from BBC fan. Dear Nathan and Curtis, as a long-time listener and first-time contributor to your mailbag, I'm a casual yet competitive League of Legends player who's been engaged with the game since Season 3. There was a time when League was my entire world. I devoted myself to studying and playing with a passion. These days, however, my commitment has shifted. Now a full-time college student with a range of interests. I have scaled back my involvement in the game. It was through a friend that I was introduced to your content, which I regard as the most impactful coaching resource since the iconic lectures by OG Froxon, UNC, UNSW, LOL Sock was the YouTube channel. The matter I'm bringing to your attention involves this friend, who I'll refer to as a washed pro. He's a veteran player who once peaked at High Diamond 1 in Season 1, but now finds himself hard stuck in Emerald. After he stumbled upon your content, his approach to our playgroup's dynamics changed dramatically. He's taken to offering relentless critiques, even going to the lengths of recording our gameplay and sharing unsolicited video reviews. While I understand his intentions are to help us improve and climb the ranks, my current life situation doesn't allow for the dedication required to advance in League. I do intend to address this with him directly in a mature conversation. However, I thought you two might get a kick out of this in a way. I hold you fully responsible for unleashing this monster upon the world. I accept your apologies in advance. And then he says, thank you, Casual Gamer.
What is this?
And this is a Discord screenshot saying, so the friend saying, VOD review for you since you seem physically incapable. So he sent a video recording. He looks like he recorded it for him. And he says, the notes are essentially the same thing I've been saying for the past year. Considering this, you need to actively address learning objectives or pursue a new champ. Open with alt before E when all-in makes E way easier to hit. Buy Doran Shield versus Poke like Kawaii Karma. It's such a big deal in all these games. You're missing a ridiculous number of E's, mostly by stopping to do crazy difficult YOLO fast ones. In some games, you're literally missing like 80% and you have all the time in the world. When getting a gank, hold your E until guaranteed CC hits or to cover options. So he's just reviewing and gives all these things. He says, hope this helps. And then he says, the casual gamer, the guy who wrote into it, says, nah. And then the friend says, that's kind of stupid. Typical response, just what is expected. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I like it. I think it's cool. Clear your friend really wants...
Yeah, I love the enthusiasm.
I love the enthusiasm. But yes, your friend does need to realize you can, you know, the old adage, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't force it to drink. You know, he should definitely not bother.
Yeah, I mean, you got to have that tough conversation. So, look, I love playing with you, whatever, but yeah, I'm just
I love your passion for the game.
I love your passion for the game. I love the enthusiasm. I'm just not ready for that. I'm very busy and I don't have the time.
It's not where my priorities
are.
That's
it, not where my priorities are. That's right. I love it. But yeah, I'm really glad that we're able to get someone like who was, you know, maybe lost their passion for the game and now doing this. They're so passionate about the game that they're literally reviewing, helping other people's review process. I love it. So, shout out to that guy.
Yep. Awesome stuff.
Awesome. Funny story.
All right. Our next email comes from Jim. The title of this email is 10,000 Hour Rule and Realization. G'day, fellas. Just had an interesting observation. I found some kind of website that gives you a yearly review summary for your 2023 gameplay on League. It's called Year in LoL. It shows you all sorts of stats. I basically one-tricked Rek'Sai for all of 2023. I was hardstuck Emerald 1-2-3 all season, and that was obviously a little bit disappointing. I have now 450,000 mastery points on Rek'Sai, which somehow, to me, should represent champion mastery. On the website, it said I spent 17 days in-game, which was in the top 6% of players for game time. It was kind of a surprise for me, because that seemed like a lot, when I personally felt like I wasn't playing too much League throughout the year. However, I then calculated 17 days of game time is actually only about 400 hours. I've been playing Rek'Sai for 1.5 years, so that means I probably have about 500 hours of in-game time on the champ. A realization that is super interesting to me is this concept of 10,000 hour mastery. It's funny to me how League makes it look like you are a one trick with massive numbers of mastery points. 450,000 seems like I am a bit of a pro at Rek'Sai, but in reality, it only represents 500 hours, which with most hobbies and skills would put you probably at about the top 9% of population in regard to that particular thing, which is exactly where I am positioned on the EUS ladder in Emerald 2. That being said, I probably do have about another 2,500 hours in-game time on other random champs since I started in Season 2. Anyway, the funny thing is, if someone has 1,000,000 points on a champ, it always seems like they have devoted their entire existence to it, but it's actually only about 1,000 hours in reality. When I think about the thousands of unique interactions and situations my champion has experienced after 500 hours in the infinite number of possible contexts that I have yet to encounter, I really just come to the realization that the mastery system is very misleading. League is probably as complicated as chess, or more so if you were to really truly master it. 500 hours, therefore, is absolutely nothing, especially if many of those hours weren't mindful, reviewed, and focused on learning, which many of them haven't been. It's always shocked me to see hard-stuck players with 2 million mastery on certain champs, but to be honest, 2 million actually isn't that significant when compared to other hobbies and sports, especially if they haven't been playing for many years. Anyway, I'd just be interested to know you guys' perspective on this. Nathan Mott has his main account, which is 100 levels higher than mine, and he has Smurfs, which are a high level, higher than level 100, not to mention the Udyr days when he was grinding to rank 3 before mastery points existed. I'll clarify, that was rank 2, not rank 3. So you guys probably do have more than 10,000 hours on the Rift. What do you think? When we add on the ungodly amount of reviews you have completed, then there is no question it's about 10,000 hours. The sheer number of hours devoted to studying or playing the game, I think, is a bigger factor than we give credit for. Love the podcast, fellas. Really awesome, and it has inspired my learning in other fields too.
Yeah, we actually had this, funny, we had this discussion, wasn't it? Last week, wasn't
it?
Oh,
we did, didn't we?
We literally had a discussion on this topic.
Tally up.
Have we done something? And we is way more.
Yeah.
Like, it's ridiculous. Because the thing we got to understand is that Nathan, or we both played from very early on. I think you were more Season 3.
Yeah.
I was Season 1. And I looked at my games played on my account. I played so many games. If you look at my Season 2, Season 3, it's like ridiculous amount of games played.
Like 2,000 games.
Like, and that's not even including the normal games. I don't know if you can quickly whip it up here. I'll quickly whip it up. It's fast because I was actually looking at it. I'll see if we bring this up here. It's worth the look. Because, and the reason I do this a lot actually is because people say I play a lot about the game. I'll say, and they're early on in the journey. And I just show them how much I played the game to show what it takes. There's a reason why I got good quicks. Because again, I had a gaming background, but the game's played. I just really want to highlight this. So look at this. Look at season. Here we go. Season. Look at the start with season. Well, look at season 2 out of intro. I can't remember that. Look at that. My top played 139. Look at the amount of games played of different champions. This is in season 2. Put this in perspective. All right. This is season 2. So how many games that is? That's at least, what's that? A few hundred there, right?
Chuck on the OBS so we can capture this as well, by the way.
Oh, is OBS not even on here? No. Oops. Okay. Okay. So we'll whip in the OBS here. So this is season 2, right?
Yep.
And then look at season 3. Look at the games played. Look at the games played.
So I'm doing the quick math here. So that's what? Probably 500, 600. Yeah, 800. Probably 600.
Look at how many champs.
Yeah. Holy moly. So probably about 800 games that season?
Yeah, I don't know. I can't do the mental math. And that's just season 3. And then you got season. And this is. Remember, I played on multiple accounts as well. Yeah. Look at this, season 4.
Yeah.
You know, and so what I'm saying in perspective, you add all these hours of all these seasons on multiple accounts and all the scrims we've done that back in the day, and then the studying the VODs, it blows it out. It's like over 10, it's like way over, it's like double 10,000 hours.
Probably
20,000, maybe even more.
30,000.
And then you also got to add in your gaming background, how many hours of competitive games we played before League of Legends.
Yeah, I started my League of Legends career again when I was my first PC games, which would have been, you know, like World of Warcraft, Call of Duty, and stuff like that, which was.
Just put it in perspective.
Like 10, 11 years
old. And there's a reason why, you know, like we talk about it, like. League is an incredibly difficult game, and the people that don't understand the hours, and that's not even including I played it was like 1,000 bot games or whatever it was, some ridiculous amount of bot games. I played bot games to level 30, and then the normal games for the entire season one. It's mind-boggling the amount of hours I spent on League.
But in saying that, our learning process was highly inefficient.
That's right.
Our approach was to throw enough shit at a wall, eventually it sticks.
But then you got that.
There's something to say.
There's something to say about the hours. But then again, the VOD reviews. So I think that on the topic of 10,000 hours, Nathan, yeah, we blow it out of the water completely.
Yep.
But I think this is such an interesting email, though, because... you're spot on. I think the mastery system is completely detached from what it actually means to have champion mastery. And the, you know, when you put it in perspective like that, they said, what, 1 million mastery points is like about 1,000 hours. That's what he said. And he said he's got, what?
No, 5 million. He says,
no, so he has 450,000 mastery points, and that's about 500 hours. So yeah, roughly equates. So if you have 1 million, that means you have about 1,000 hours, right?
That's right, yeah.
So that's still a lot, right? If you played 1,000 hours of your champion, it's still a lot in the grand scheme of things. But in the grand scheme of like what that means for a skill, like if you played 1,000, you've done 1,000 hours of what he said there, of tennis or something, in the grand scheme of things, yeah.
Percentages make sense. Percentages make perfect sense. Or something like that, you know, yeah.
But we think of 1 million mastery points as like, wow, you must be like the top of the top. Like you must be insane at that champion. And you would be good at that. You should be good at that champion. But again, it's... little bit deceiving there.
And it's especially, again, going back to our previous email of Jawsy writing in, you know, having those questions, Big Peter trying to reflect on his journey with, you know, if you do the math, wait, so he did how many games this season?
20, probably about 20 games of this split. So that's...
He had 150 games, I think.
Yeah.
Like right. With the Katarina, something
right,
like that.
Sorry, with
the 150. So that's 75 hours if you do half an hour each game.
Yep.
75 hours. And we're trying to, you know, figure out, do we deserve our rank and all this crazy stuff.
And you're in platinum
already,
doing a pretty good job.
Yeah. If anything, the journey's going fantastic.
It's going fantastic. It's got to keep it up. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I love this email. It puts it in perspective for a lot of people.
Yeah, think about how much you've actually played League.
Remember the hours.
You're sitting there,
and the intention with those hours, again. You play a lot of hours, like me and you pissed away all those games, I guess, in seasons 1 to 7.
Yeah, we've wasted thousands of hours.
We've pissed away thousands of hours.
Yeah. Probably at least 5,000 hours, I'll say. Not even joking, 5,000
hours. I don't
want
to know that. Fuck, it's actually scary when you put it like that. I was like looking at it as a positive, but it's actually kind of a negative, honestly. I could have played so many less games.
So much more efficient,
had so much more intensity and process. Fuck me.
This is going back to the beginning of the episode saying feeling like a piece of shit. This is our full, we come full circle.
Oh, damn it.
The thoughts are coming back.
You know, and I'm so envious of the, in a way, of the people though that are able to like actually start their journey the right way
with the process now.
Far out,
that's
man.
So cool.
Imagine starting your League journey now, and actually like understanding this shit. Like, and you put 5 years, 10 years into League. Far out, man.
It's like when you hear, because I've recently watched the Drive to Survive documentary, F1, and. You know, all the top drivers now, they started at like 8 years old with like full, you know, coach and like mentors, and like they're in like the McLaren, the Mercedes team from 9 years old. Like that's where that level, that sport's got to. And you can't be an F1 driver unless you have started at 8 years old. Just not possible nowadays, which is cool. Hopefully that's where our sport can
get
to.
That's where League will go.
Yeah.
I think that's 100% where League will go. You'll have to start young. You'll have to have someone you have to be intense and intentional about your practice. You won't be able to just mindlessly play games and get good. Like the whole thing about like those prodigies might exist, but they'll be very rare, I reckon.
They wouldn't be able to beat a process kid from the young. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yep. Spot on. And we're actually seeing that already, by the way, in like a lot of traditional sports, like especially in tennis. Like you watch the tennis documentary, it talks about how like there was like an American, there was like three Americans, and there was like the most talented, guy, and he used to dominate the other two. I think it was Taylor Fritz is the Taylor Fritz guy, and then there was another guy. But when they were talking about on the documentary about when they were younger and they're playing college and those nationals and stuff, this one guy was just so much better. He was smashing him. He was like a child prodigy, and then like just didn't work as hard, didn't put in the effort, and Taylor Fritz just destroys him now. Is just way higher ranked, and that happens. Process, effort, consistent effort,
coaching.
Learning, coaching, just trumps. and that those traditional sports that have been around for a long time and they're so sophisticated in their coaching and understanding of the sport, that's just the way it is now. Talent only gets you so far. It gets you, it gives you an opportunity, it gives you a chance, but you still got to bust your balls.
I think that will be the case even just to get to like GM Challenger.
Oh, yeah, eventually.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're spot on.
They'll be so competitive, those spots.
It'll be so, it's already getting there. I mean, believe it or not, the people that don't, it is. It is hard to get Challenger. Like, fucking hard.
It is, yeah.
Like, really hard. Like, people, like, you will see streamers that don't, like, no, it is hard.
Yeah, they drop off. And they people drop off. Like, I'm looking you see a lot of the old players, they've really struggled against the Challenger.
Yeah,
nowadays.
Really, really struggled. I'm looking at bloody one of the guys, AJ, in the MLA, one of the coaches. He's a really good player, and he's not comfortably a challenger player. Like, he's not comfortable in the sense that, like, you'd just chill and play. And no, he has to try really hard, and he's not, like, a super... He's not even a... Not a high chow. He's, like, a low chow. But he's insanely good.
Yeah.
Like, insanely, insanely good. It's mind-boggling how good you have to be a challenger player.
All right. Well, that wraps it up for this episode, Curtis.
Yep.
Any final comments? Yeah, so let us know what you think about the
format.
High elo versus low elo details segment. We call it that.
Yeah, if you think it's too many with the Curtis Eclipse and the high elo, low elo, let us know. We can taper it back. We need to hear from you about that. Otherwise, that's it.
Good work, guys. Keep on improving. Process 3 blocks review. We'll see you next week.